A traveler from an Eastern European country lands in a New York airport and discovers a snag. While in the air, his homeland, Krakosia, has dissolved in a violent coup. In the film The Terminal, Tom Hanks plays a character struggling to understand this predicament. An airport security officer gives him a blunt explanation.
Imagine that these potato chips are Krakosia, okay?
Krakosia.
Krakosia.
Yes.
Krakosia.
Okay.
So the potato chips are Krakosia.
Okay.
Okay. And this apple.
Big apple. Big apple.
The big apple represents the Liberty Rebels. Okay. No more Krakosia. Okay. New government. Revolution. You understand? So all the flights in and out of your country have been suspended indefinitely. And the new government has sealed all the borders, which means that your passport and visa are no longer valid. So currently, you are a citizen of nowhere.
As a man without a country or a valid passport, Hank's character can't leave the airport, and he can't fly back to Krakosia. He's stuck. The airport terminal becomes his home for months on end. And while that may sound like a nightmare, this is a Steven Spielberg film, so it's essentially a fairy tale. Hank's character is a prisoner of fate, but the terminal is a prison full of fast food, fancy retail stores, and immigrant employees who root for Hank's displaced character, Victor Naborski. Tom Hanks joined us to talk about preparing for the role of Victor. He says he had ample material to work with, based in part on his own airport horror stories.
Quite frankly, usually the times I've been delayed have been stuck in a plane on the tarmac that is, you know, the pilot comes on and says, yeah, folks, we don't have our gate in LaGuardia, and FAA regulations require us to remain on the ground until that gate opens up. So we're going to be sitting here in, on the runway for a little bit. As soon as we're able to take off, we'll let you know. And 4 hours later, all the liquor has been sold, and there's fistfights back on aisle 22, and the flight attendants have all demonstrated their jujitsu moves. I think what happens is when you go into an airport, you are at the mercy of something that is beyond your control. There's a storm somewhere else in the world, and that's where you're going, so you're stranded. There's a problem with a computer, and you're stranded. The only talisman you can carry with you is your ticket that says you're supposed to be in seat 3B. Sometimes you take a long time before you can get to seat 3B.
You know, it is such an interesting concept. The idea that someone could experience a, sort of a full immersion in American culture without actually setting foot on American soil, that they could still get a taste of this country in what's essentially a big glass cage.
Well, we talked about the movie that you never see, which is what happens to Victor when he returns to his nation of Krakosia. And people would say, so how was it? Tell us about America. And even though he was in airline terminal for 9 months, he would say, oh, America is magnificent. The people are so friendly. The things you can buy everywhere are so bright. They're so exciting. People come and going. You can buy a radio right there. You can buy olive oil. You can get coffee. It is a magnificent place. Marvelous. So exciting. I'm so glad I saw United States of America. And he never got out of the airport in JFK, but it is representative of everything he would see and the people that he would meet elsewhere.
And there we just heard Victor's accent. He comes from a country called Krakosia, presumably somewhere in the former Soviet bloc. So you were sort of free to create whatever accent you wanted, as long as it sounded slightly Russian.
Well, we started with a Slavic beginning to it, and a Cyrillic alphabet language. And the Krakosia means that it comes from one of those nations with a IA at the end of it, Estonia, Latvia, Yugoslavia. We just do the grunt work. I've worked with the same dialect coaches on 4 or 5 movies, and we just months and months before we begin to find a root language. In this case, it was Bulgarian because we both knew people who were from Bulgaria. And you just do the exercises and you do the training and you learn the differences for the inflections that they use. For example, They don't ask questions the same way the Western society does. In America, you'd say, "Hey, are you going to the market?" But in Krakosia, Bulgaria, they'd say, "You are going to the market." it's a statement, as opposed to a question.
We have a scene where Victor approaches Dolores Torres. She's an immigration officer, and she sits at this counter with these two big stamps in front of her: one green, one red, approved, denied. Yeah. Let's hear the scene.
Next. Let me ask you something, Mr. Noworski. Why do you wait here 2 hours every day when I've told you there's nothing I can do for you? That your new visa will not arrive until your country is recognized by the United States.
You have two stamps. One red, one green.
So?
So, I have chance go New York 50-50.
There's some faith in the bureaucracy right there. He's been learning English from the news crawl at the bottom of television programs. He came across that phrase 50-50 just before that. So he's a guy like when you learn like a fragment of a language, you try to use it all day long, you know, and that's what he's doing. So he said, "Oh, I have chance 50-50." So he actually figures out what that means, and he's delighted to be able to use it.
You know, your voice is almost unrecognizable in the film, though. It's much deeper, much more guttural.
Well, thank you. That's part of my job is to my hair looks exactly the same as it does in most movies, but it has
a little
to
curlier.
Maybe we're trying to say like a little. How do you have a Slavic haircut? I don't know. What does a Slavic haircut look like exactly? It's all part of the superstructure that you try to develop. And the people from the old country that I have known, I mean, because my in-laws are from the old country. They're not necessarily loud people unless they're at a soccer match. So they swallow a lot of things in back of throat and doesn't come out with like they're not comedians, these people.
And there was a lot of improvisation. Apparently, you brought things to the character that weren't in the script.
Stephen has a tendency to just let the camera run, and you're actually at the end of the script as it the scene as it was scripted on the page, and the camera's not going off, so you fill it up with a few other things, and he'll also come in with examples. He says, "Look, for example, there's a lot of times where I say yes, and somebody else says yes, and we end up riffing on the word yes for a few seconds." Yes, 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 yes. He says, keep doing that and land on a word and just keep repeating it. Okay, 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 okay. And it rounds out the scene.
Is there an example of that? An example you could give us that we can look for in the film that,
well,
that was not in the script, something you just came up with on the spot of the moment?
There is a scene where Stanley Tucci as Mr. Dixon, who's head of the airport security, is trying to get me to sign a piece of paper that says, "I am afraid of going home to my country." And the scene eventually ended with me saying, "Well, I can't sign this piece of paper. I'm not afraid of my country. I'm not afraid of going home." And he says, "Okay, get out of here." And that was the end of the scene. It was scripted. And the camera didn't stop. So I said, I was trying to think, well, what am I afraid of? And I said, "Well, I'm afraid of ghosts." I'll sign that piece of paper. I actually said, "I'm afraid of Dracula." Peter Bavesky, who was my on-set Bulgarian, he says, "We don't say Dracula. We don't know who this is. It's Dracula." And so the next take I said, "I'm afraid of Dracula." And we just kept going and going and going until Stephen used what, however much he wanted to use.
I think at one point you also said, "I'm afraid of this room."
I did, yes. Yeah, that's right. You see, I can't remember all of them because I only said it once and it ended up in the movie.
At this point in your career, you have two Oscars. You've done a range of films from drama to adventure to comedy.
Dramedy.
And dramedy
like,
also.
You sound like part of the marketing department. How do we sell this movie? It's a dramedy. That's what it is.
Well, how do you select your projects now?
I'm intrigued by it. There's something in the screenplay or the idea that I think I can't believe no one's ever thought of this before. It's a theme that can withstand the examination of having a movie made about it. And I must say I'm very lucky. I can make my choices just based on I don't have to do it for any other reasons other than my own enthusiasm for it.
You've done some very serious films, obviously. Philadelphia, Road to Perdition, Saving Private Ryan, films that had some edge to them, like Punchline. But you do a lot of films that have sort of fairy tale quality and a bit of fairy dust in them. And is that how Hollywood, is that a box that Hollywood has put you in, or are you drawn to these kinds of films, these sort of films that have a bit of fairy dust?
Well, actually, the fairy dust is a dime a dozen kind. Those movies exist all over the place, and they always have. I mean, you can go back to movies like what was the movie about the happy caterpillar? Was it called Curly? You know, or there's always been movies
about the happy caterpillar.
Wasn't it called Curly? I'm thinking it was a Cary Grant movie. Oh, we'll get your crack team of.
We have people already on IMDb right now.
I believe it was called Curly. It had a name like that, and was about a caterpillar that held the consciousness of America for a while. So the nature of whimsy can often just be a lazy shortcut in order to evoke an emotional investment from the audience. And it's not enough. There has to be something in there that can withstand the rigors of a logical audience. It has to be not unlike the actual fairy tales of old, in which there was very serious consequences to Little Red Riding Hood escaping a wolf that was going to devour her. You know, things. It has to be of an emotional core that everybody can recognize, as opposed to Cinderella went to the ball and met her dreamboat.
Yeah, the Brothers Grimm were not happy fellows.
Was the word Grimm invented because of the Brothers Grimm?
I think so.
They're very fascinating stuff to read, because it's all about death and cannibalism. It seems like those fairy tales.
I'm just curious, before we let you go, we were wondering, with your name, T. Hanks, if your email address is thanks.
That would be kind of easy, wouldn't it? I have an email. My email address is such an obscure reference that no one would be able to figure it out unless I gave it to them.
So it's not but thanks it's not. At mindspring.com or something like
no,
that.
No, but if you did that, you'd probably get some renegade website that is printing lies about guys like me.
Thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you. Thank you, Nichelle. Pleasure.
Tom Hanks speaking to us from Santa Monica. His latest film, The Terminal, opens today. And the Caterpillar movie?
Yes.
It's called Once Upon a Time.
No. It's called Curly. I swear. It's one of the movies that received like 9 Academy Award nominations and didn't win a single one. It stars Cary Grant. Are you typing this in right now?
1944. Hold on. They're insisting it's called Once Upon a Time. The caterpillar is named Curly, though.
Okay. Holy cow. How could I get that wrong?